It's time now for the early music show, and as part of the BBC's Sound of Cinema, Lucy Skeeping looks at the role of the harpsichord in the world of film.
That was Richard Egarr playing the prelude from the first English suite in A major by Bach, a recent recording made on a copy of a 1638 instrument by Rukus of Antwerp, and a lovely example of the kind of historically informed playing that we've come to expect today, giving us what you could call the natural sound of the harpsichord, which is a long way, in fact a very, very long way, from something like this.
Thank you.
irrepressible pioneering champion of the harpsichord, Wanda Landowska, back in the mid-1940s, performing Couperin's Les Barricades Mystérieuses on her custom-built two-manual pleyel instrument. It was undoubtedly a remarkable machine, capable of a big sound, which perhaps owed more to Pleyel's knowledge of modern piano building than any awareness of how harpsichords were actually made back in the 17th and 18th centuries. But then Landowska wasn't too concerned about historical accuracy. Her aim was to introduce her audiences to the keyboard music of neglected past masters. And since the piano itself wasn't necessarily up to this task, she had her own specially designed 4x4 off-road heavy-duty harpsichord made. As for authenticity, well, when a fellow Bach specialist, the cellist Pablo Casals, criticised her for not even striving for it, Landowska, undaunted, simply responded with, "You play Bach your way, and I'll play him his way." All of which might lead you to think today's early music show is going to be about the 20th century revival of the harpsichord. But no, in fact, we're going a little off-piste for the next hour or so. And the reference to Wanda Landowska is all part of the plot. In the light of the current Radio 3 celebration of film music, The Sound of Cinema, we thought we'd take a look at the role of the harpsichord in the world of the silver screen. In fact, the history of film music runs more or less in tandem with the re-emergence of interest in the harpsichord, and the instrument seems to have made something of an impact on the film world. Wanda Landowska was one of the most important people to prompt the revival of interest in the harpsichord, and it was her playing of it and her now rather old-fashioned sounding instrument that fixed itself into the minds of 20th century composers when they first started to think of writing for it, which they very quickly did. Jacques Ibert's score for the 1932 film Don Quixote has to be one of the first to feature a harpsichord, and when in 1939 the director William Wyler, a passionate music lover, came to make his film of Wuthering Heights with Laurence Olivier and Merle Oberon in the lead roles, he took the opportunity to present a starry role for the fashionable newcomer on the block. "Quick," announces Isabella Linton to Heathcliff at a soiree, "Madame Ehlers is going to play the harpsichord." Madame Ehlers playing the Rondo alla Turca by Mozart on the harpsichord in a scene from the 1939 film Wuthering Heights. Madame Ehlers was in fact a real person, Alice Ehlers, a pupil of Wanda Landowska, and the instrument she performs on in the film is Landowska's two-manual harpsichord, replete with a modern black-and-white piano keyboard. But what's interesting is why the harpsichord should feature in the film at this point. The scene is set in the mid-19th century and the music is a piano sonata by Mozart, so this is hardly a quest on the part of the director for historical accuracy. Rather, it reflects the fashion in the 1930s for the instrument itself. It's something beyond the ordinary, and the harsh jangling tones of the harpsichord perfectly reflect the frisson that exists between Cathy and Heathcliff as they exchange pained expressions towards each other, whilst Madame Ehlers ploughs on with her recital. Had it been a piano playing, the effect would not have been quite the same. But without doubt, one of the most frequent reasons for using a harpsichord in a film score from this time, and to a certain extent this is still true today, is to suggest the past, the historic. Again, it doesn't really matter if the use is anachronistic. The point is, for composers of film music, the harpsichord instantly suggests another age.
Thus far, with rough and all unable pen, our bending author hath pursued his story. In little room confining mighty men, mangling by starts the full course of their glory. Small time, but in that small, most greatly lived this star of England. Fortune made his sword, by which the world's best garden he achieved, and of it left his son imperial lord, which oft our stage hath shown, and for their sake, in your fair minds, let this acceptance.
Thank you.
Christopher Plummer was the narrator in a concert version of the film music that William Walton wrote for the 1944 screen adaptation of Shakespeare's Henry V. And there, at the heart of the score, is an early use of the harpsichord, providing its own distinctive clatter and a nod in the direction of a bygone age. In our own time, the use of the harpsichord for period film scores would strike us as being obvious, but in the right hands and with a little imagination, it can still be tellingly effective. James Newton Howard's score for the film Restoration, an adaptation of the novel of the same name by Rose Tremain, set in 17th century England, combines actual music by Purcell with some clever pastiche. The subtle presence of the harpsichord gives us no doubt of where we are historically, particularly when it comes to Howard's sneaky reference to the La Follia theme. Here are three movements from his score, the last being a transcription for harpsichord of an actual ground bass by Purcell.
Thank you.
music by James Newton Howard for the film Restoration. Yes, you are listening to the Early Music Show on BBC Radio 3 with me, Lucy Skeeping, and we're paying deference today to our Sound of Cinema season with a look at the role of the harpsichord in film. Just before we move on, I want to play another example, a more recent one, of the harpsichord being used in a film to place us emotionally in the past. It's very subtle, this, but all the more effective for that. Klaus Badelt's music for the first in the Pirates of the Caribbean series is steeped in references to the 18th century, the period in which the films are set. Not in any obvious way, it's true, but, for instance, I can't be alone in thinking that even the score's main theme offers quite a bit to the tunes of the old 18th century English broadside ballads, just the sort of things that might have announced news of piracy on the high seas. But let's let that be. At the very start of the film score, it's the use of the harpsichord with cello that launches the whole adventure. In other words, the classic lineup of the 18th century continuo. 21st century in bed with the 18th in Klaus Badelt's music for The Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl. And I think Hans Zimmer also had a hand in some of that as well. By the time the great Wanda Landowska died in 1959, her work championing the revival of the harpsichord was irreversibly in place. What had begun as an exercise to reintroduce the keyboard music of 17th and 18th century composers to a wider audience had grown into something much more. The harpsichord offered an individual and distinctive colour and was capable of evoking something that was again very distinctive and individual. By the 1960s and 70s, composers found themselves more and more drawn to the harpsichord, and paradoxically, not because it was old, but because it sounded new and fresh. Combine it with an orchestra, and it lifted the orchestral sound beyond the realms of the obvious and the established. And let's face it, if the 1960s and 70s were about anything, it was about rejecting the obvious and the established. The sound of the harpsichord began to appear in everything, from pop songs to TV jingles. And when the film composer Ron Goodwin was looking for something to suggest a slightly offbeat elderly English lady with a penchant for solving crime, well, the harpsichord seemed to fit the bill perfectly.
Thank you.
Ron Goodwin's Miss Marple theme, quirky, alternative, but deeply rooted all the same. In that recording, the BBC Phil was conducted by Rumo Gamba. In the period before electronic synthesizers began to take a hold, the novelty of the harpsichord sound quickly led to its becoming a kind of fashion statement. Of course, the kind of harpsichord that composers had in their ears back then owed more to the school of Wanda Landowska than the sort of instrument we'd see today. It was still far more robust, more sort of solidly built than the real authentic instruments, and usually featured all sorts of modern materials and extras. It was useful if it could work well with modern instruments. Here's another example of a successful film score from that time that combines harpsichord with modern instruments. The main theme from Jerry Goldsmith's 1973 score for Papillon. The theme from Papillon by Jerry Goldsmith. Just 3 years earlier appeared one of the more interesting uses of the harpsichord in a film. There can be very few people who don't know the theme from the 1970s romantic drama Love Story, and the composer, Francis Lai, won an Academy Award for his music. The film's central female character is Jenny, played by Ally McGraw. She, alongside male lead Ryan O'Neill, who played Oliver, are two Harvard graduates. Jenny's subject is music. In fact, she plays the harpsichord, suggesting her pursuit of intellectualism by way of an interest in the fashionable early music movement. At one point in the film, we even see her perform a Bach concerto. If you haven't seen Love Story, spoiler alert! It doesn't end very happily. Jenny has leukemia, and tragically she and Oliver are destined to spend a short time together. At one moment in the film, Jenny, unable to cope with the situation, goes missing. A distraught Oliver sets off to find her. What is clever in the music for this moment is how the harpsichord, representing what we know and associate with Jenny, sounds cerebral and remote, but as the same music reappears, scored now for piano and strings, as Jenny is found by Oliver, so we get a feeling of intense warmth and passion. That was music from the film A Love Story by Francis Lai. And so we discover a new film role for the harpsichord. The ability to sound cold and steely makes it an ideal instrument for horror movies. And film composers were quick to take advantage of this. Two contrasting examples now. The second is part of Harry Robinson's music for the classic Hammer horror Vampire Lovers. This actually came out in the same year as Love Story. Surely that can't be a coincidence. And before that, we hear the main theme from one of the most sinister movies from the time, Roman Polanski's Rosemary's Baby. It was Thomas Beecham who once compared the sound of a harpsichord to skeletons and tin roofs, and I guess here we can witness that sound being put to good effect.
Thank you.
the harpsichord, adding its not insubstantial contribution to the feeling of spine-tingling fear in the scores of Harry Robinson's Vampire Lovers and Christophe Komeda's Rosemary's Baby. This is a special film music edition of the Early Music Show with me, Lucy Skeeping. Of course, in this survey of the role of the harpsichord in film music, we shouldn't forget that the instrument instantly suggests the past. And this makes it wonderfully good at evoking the Gothic. Even today, when film composers have a myriad of effects and sounds at their disposal in order to provoke a sense of fright, it's the harpsichord that has the uncanny ability to transport us to those scary realms of cobwebbed castles and life beyond death. When Danny Elfman set to create the music for Tim Burton's Gothic cartoon The Corpse Bride, surely he had his harpsichordist at the top of his list of musicians he needed to book.
It's a beautiful day.
It's a rather nice day.
A day for a glorious wedding.
A rehearsal, my dear, to be perfectly clear.
A rehearsal for a glorious wedding.
Assuming nothing happens that we don't really know.
That nothing unexpected interferes with the show.
And that's why everything, every last little thing, every single tiny microscopic little thing must go.
According to plan.
Our son will be married.
According to plan.
To the costume ball.
In the hallowed halls.
Rubbing elbows with the finest.
Having crumpets with her highness.
We'll be there, we'll be seen. Having tea with the queen. We'll forget everything
that we've ever been.
It's a terrible day for a wedding.
It's a sad, sad state of affairs we're in.
That has led to this ominous wedding.
How could our family have come to this?
to marry off our daughter to the nouveau riche.
They're so common.
So coarse.
Oh, it couldn't be worse.
Couldn't be worse. I'm afraid I disagree. They could be land-rich, bankrupt aristocracy without a penny to their name, just like you and me.
And that's why everything, every last little thing, every single tiny microscopic little thing must go.
According to plan,
our daughter will wed.
According to plan,
our family led
from the depths of deepest poverty to the noble realm
of our ancestors.
And who would have guessed in a million years that our daughter with the face
of an otter in disgrace
would provide our tickets to our rightful place?
What if Victor and I don't like each other?
Do you suppose your father and I like each other?
Surely you must, a little.
Of course not.
Get those corsets laced properly. I can hear you speak without gasping. Marriage is a partnership, a little tit for tat. You'd think a lifetime watching us might have taught her that. Might have taught her
everything
that.
Must be perfect.
Everything must be perfect.
Everything must be perfect, perfect.
That's why everything, every last little thing, every single tiny microscopic little thing must go according to plan.
Albert Finney, Joanna Lumley, Tracy Ullman and Paul Whitehouse were the singers in that music from The Corpse Bride by Danny Elfman. And that's one lineup I never expected to have to announce on the Early Music Show. As I said, we're slightly off-piste in today's programme, taking a look at the role of the harpsichord in film music as part of Radio 3's Sound of Cinema season. And we come now to my last music. And here we see how, for some modern film composers, the harpsichord offers a wonderfully rich and unusual colour with which to blend, mix and create novel and fantastical sounds. Could Couperin or Rameau ever have imagined anything like this, I wonder? One of the more distinctive scores that's emerged from the cinema in recent years is Jon Tiersen's music for Jean-Pierre Jeunet's film Amélie. For all its references to traditional Parisian music hall and street music, Tiersen's score is really fresh and as colourful as Jeunet's use of filters and lighting is vibrant. Until next time, that's all, folks. The top of 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 the top of
Amelie's Waltz by Jon Tiersen, part of his music for the film Amelie. Today's early music show, looking at the harpsichord in film music, was presented by Lucy Skeeping and produced in Salford by Chris Wines. All our programmes are available for a week via the Radio 3 website or the iPlayer. And you can also download yesterday's programme, The A to Z of Baroque at the Box Office, by going to the Early Music Show page on the Radio 3 website.